Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Good day, everyone. You are listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today is the 23rd of February. We will continue listening to Master Tenjin Chosen's Pee-wee's program, Meditation, Dying, and Karma. And please enjoy.
If someone were to ask you what mostly causes your suffering, how would you reply? Would you say your partner, husband or wife, like those dreadful comedians who always choose their spouses to be the butt of their jokes? Would it be your cranky car or appliance that seems to conk out whenever you need it most? Perhaps it's the neighbor whose love of loud music keeps you awake at night, or the work colleague who never fails to get up your nose. If you've been listening to the program over the last few weeks, you might have realized that actually all our suffering is created by our own minds. The second of the four seals, which all Buddhists subscribe to, states all contaminated phenomena are in the nature of suffering. And by contaminated phenomena is meant phenomena that come in contact with our deluded minds. In other words, anything that our mind touches is contaminated by the way we perceive it, through our veils of delusion. And when our perception of phenomena is polluted like this, we experience suffering of one sort or another. So if we want to be free of suffering, and let's face it, who doesn't, we have to address the stuff that is going on in our minds. It's no good fixing the situation with our wife, husband or partner, with our cranky car or with our heavy metal playing neighbor, but paying no attention to our mental habits and tendencies. All that will happen is that as one problem is solved, another pops up in its place. Because we haven't got to the root of our problems, our troublesome mind. Once we fix that, we will never have to experience suffering again. And wouldn't that be nice? Then if you ask what it is about our minds that causes all these problems, the answer is the two, karma and afflictive emotion. Mental habits, tendencies, and imprints created by our actions in the past, together with our reactive emotions, make up the poisonous mix that ensures that we will knock ourselves up with everything we encounter. And of the two, the one that makes the brew poisonous is the afflictive emotions. For even if we had a large zoo full of wild negative karma waiting to leap out and bite us, it would be helpless if we had no afflictive emotions like pride, anger, attachment, and so on. The afflictive emotions are like naughty children that open the gates to the caged animals in the zoo. No longer caged, our karma is free to ripen into miserable experiences for us. Again, if you've been listening over the last few weeks, you would know that the six main afflictive emotions are attachment, anger, ignorance, pride, doubt, and wrong view. We've been through these six quite extensively, so this week we're going to carry on and look at how the delusions or afflictive emotions develop and the causes for them to arise. But first, as usual, let's take a moment to consider our motivation for being here at all. Of course, you could have tuned in to any other radio station and now be listening to music or chat instead of a Dharma discussion. However, the other stations will only give a moment's entertainment that will be over by the time you have switched the radio off. This Dharma discussion might just give you some insight into how things work in this existence of ours and help you to gain freedom from all our suffering. So in that sense, it's much more worthwhile than anything else on the radio today. However, to make it really worthwhile, our intention is really important. If we had tuned into Planet FM today just to fill in time or be distracted while we eat lunch, it won't be much better than turning into any talkback show. But if we tuned in today with the intention to progress towards enlightenment, this program will have some real value in our lives. Then if we couple that with the wish to help others also progress towards enlightenment, wow, that's the best motivation of all. For that motivation not only encompasses one person's happiness, but the happiness of countless people. That, as the young ones would say, is massive. So let's set such a motivation right now. It is said that if you can have such a motivation when doing any action, you create enormous amounts of positive potential that will really help you in future lives. Therefore, let's do it. Thank you. Now getting back to those pesky afflictive emotions and karma. How do the afflictive emotions, attachment, anger, ignorance, pride, doubt, and deluded views develop? Well, the great master Dhammakirti wrote in one of his texts, by holding self, we hold other. Through self and other, attachment and aversion arise. And in connection with this, all faults arise. Remember last week when listing the deluded views, we talked about the transitory collection. Those of you who were here, do you recollect what that meant? Basically, it means that if we were to take ourselves apart, both body and mind, like a scientist, and examine what makes this organism I call me up, all we will find is a collection of bits and pieces, each of which is changing instant by instant. For instance, our body is made up of skin, hair, flesh, bones, organs, and so on, every one of which is transforming even as I speak. Not one atom of it is staying stable and permanent, not even one neutron. Then if we could take our mind, our internal event, apart, we would find mental and emotional bits and pieces that are also changing in just the same way. Sensations, thoughts, emotions, perceptions, consciousnesses, mental factors, we could poke around them all and they would be just like chameleons, changing shape and color instant by instant. Of course, I'm talking figuratively here because consciousness, for one, doesn't have shape or color, but it still changes instant by instant. So that is what we would find, a collection of psychophysical aggregates, none of which is permanent or independent. But do we see ourselves like this? If someone praises you highly, do you think of yourself as a collection of changing bits and pieces? No, most of us, about 99.99%, don't think like that at all. We think these bits and pieces make up a real me, that even though I know goes from being a small yawping baby to a big grown-up, is something real and independent. Just imagine for a moment being highly praised and look at the pleased I that arises. How does it appear to you? Can you see how solid and unified it appears? Is there any doubt in your mind that you have a real, independent, inherently existing me there? The Buddha said, even though that I arises so powerfully and seems so real, sometimes even more real than the outside world, it doesn't actually exist like that at all, not even in the slightest way. It's just a mental hallucination that we have lived with since before the year dot. So the view of the transitory collection, again, is our view that when we look at ourselves, which is just a collection of ever-changing psychological bits and physical pieces, we tend to see something that exists in an inherent, independent, and permanent way. We tend to see a real, inherent self where there isn't one. This is what Dharmakirti was talking about when he said, by holding self. Then when he continued, we hold other, he was saying that we see others mistakenly in the same way. Others exist as a collection of psycho bits and physical pieces as well, but we see them as having some real, independent, inherent existence also. Well, look at someone close to you, if not with your eyes, at least with your mind. How do you see them? Do you see a collection of skin, eyes, nose, mouth, flesh, bones, heart, lungs, toes, and so on? Do you see a collection of ever-changing consciousnesses, emotions, thoughts, sensations, perceptions, and so on? Or do you see a person that you think is real and independent, that acts in certain fixed ways, and that has certain fixed personality? Again, 99% of us grasp at others in the same way as we grasp at ourselves, as independently and inherently existing. So our world is made up of independent, isolated organisms and phenomena with their own inherent characteristics. And then, when we see things and people like that, we develop attachment and aversion to them. Those things and people that are nice to us, that make us feel special in some way, we latch onto as our friends or our lovers. We expect them to continue to make us feel good, and we see them in some way as mine, my friend, my lover. We develop a kind of possessiveness about them, and we expect lots of goodies from them. Those things and people that strike us for one reason or another are not necessarily very sensible or rational reasons, as harmful, ugly, smelly, and so on, we regard with aversion. They become in some way our enemy, and we want to hurt them, or at least put as much distance between them and ourselves as possible. This is what Dharmakirti referred to when he said, through self and other, attachment and aversion arise. Other people who we don't see as good or bad for us, we just ignore as though they don't matter. Then when we have good friends and they ask us to steal, lie, or even kill for them, we don't have any compunction about agreeing, because after all, they're our friends and we should stick by them. For instance, let's say a young chap, John, joins a rugby club and becomes mates with the other players, perhaps one or two in particular. A couple of them are right into hunting and fishing and invite him to go with them on a fishing trip out on the harbour. Now, John has never been fishing before, but because he likes these guys and he thinks it might be fun, he agrees. And soon, he's a regular on their boat catching many fish. Then the next time they go hunting, they invite him along, and before too long, he has his own gun and gear and is an avid killer of deer and wild pigs. And also an avid collector of negative karma, which ensures both that cyclic existence for him continues and that he will suffer eons of intense misery in the future. Similarly, when John's friends get into an argument with someone from another club and decide they need to teach the guy a lesson, they ask him along to help. Because they're his mates, John, of course, says yes and helps them give the guy a good hiding. You see, because the other guy became the enemy of John's friends, he became John's enemy also. And so John collects a lot more negative karma around him as well. You might think this is a rough scenario, but I think that if we look carefully into our own lives, we will see much of this sort of thing going on as well. Maybe not to the extent of bashing someone else, but certainly of bad-mouthing them or doing something to harm them in some way. All the negative emotions come out of this view that sees ourselves and others as existing independently and inherently. If we could see that the other guy is just a collection of ever-changing bits and pieces, we wouldn't get so hung up about him or his behavior. If you could actually see that a person acts according to their previous conditioning and that their behavior will be completely different in a different situation, why on earth would you get angry or upset with him? But no, when we see them as real and truly existing, we ascribe good person or bad person to them and then act as if that's how they really truly are. By doing so, we only create negative karma and more problems for ourselves and for them. So this is what Dharmakirti meant by, and in connection with this, all faults arise. To free ourselves from this view of the transitory collection, we have to realize how reality and ourselves truly exist, as a collection of parts, causes and conditions that we merely label according to our need. Here, I'm talking to you as Tenzin the monk. When you see me, you might think I'm a real Tenzin the monk. But how did I get to be that? I'm only Tenzin because His Holiness the Dalai Lama said at my ordination, "Your name is Tenzin." And then everyone else said, "Oh yes, that's right, his name is Tenzin." But I wasn't Tenzin before that. Before, I was Russell. I'm only Tenzin because we all agree to call me that, not because there's some kind of inherently existing Tenzin the monk here at all. If everybody else in the world decided that my name was really Tomato and nobody agreed to call me Tenzin, then it would be as if Tenzin never existed. Tenzin would completely go out of existence even if I kept on saying, "Hey, I'm Tenzin, not Tomato." Then there would be a real inherently existing Tomato the monk is existing here, wouldn't there? No, I'm only joking. But do you see that although it appears there's a real inherently existing person, that is not how it really is, and this is what we have to realize to get over our idiocy and our suffering. The Mahayana tradition calls this lack of an inherent independent being the emptiness of the being, meaning it is empty of existing inherently. No atom of inherent existence exists anywhere. It is all, and that means everything, dependent on other things. And most of it is impermanent, changing moment by moment. The realization of this is the antidote to all our wrong views and suffering. The Sutra on the Ten Grounds states, whatever faults exist in the world, all arise from self-grasping. If we are free from this conception of self, there are no faults. This is a bit of a long explanation of the delusions arising in us. But just in brief again, it goes, first I look at myself and see me as distortedly, as an inherently independently existing being. On the basis of that, I look at others and see them as inherently and independently existing beings. Then, based on those concepts, I develop attachment for those that are pleasing to me in some way and aversion to those who are not. To those who are neither pleasing nor displeasing, I develop indifference. Then all my emotions and actions are based on this friend-enemy-stranger categorization, which makes cyclic existence the perpetual motion machine that it is for me. I hope you get some understanding of how it works. So what then makes the afflictive emotions arise within us? What in our environment causes emotions like attachment, anger, and so forth to suddenly make their influence on us felt? We can list six main factors. The first being the latencies or potentials that are placed on our minds by our previous experiences and actions. Whatever we do places an imprint on the consciousness, which is like a seed. It stays there until conditions arise which ripen it into some kind of experience for us. We can liken it to the seed of a plant, which lies dormant in the soil until enough fertilizer, moisture, warmth come about, at which point the seed germinates and starts growing into a big tree. Now think back on all the actions you've created in this life, even the smallest. Each of these has made an impression on your mind and will have an effect on how you experience the future. We can see this quite evidently in traumatic events. For example, I teach mindfulness meditations for people with borderline personality disorder. Up to quite recently, they were mostly women, some of whom had had very traumatic experiences with men when they were still children. Now, I'm normally a harmless individual, especially in this class, and try to come across as low-key as possible. But I remember some time ago, one woman who had had a very nasty experience with a man which colored all her subsequent encounters with men. In particular, she said I reminded her of the man who caused her problems, and it became impossible for her to react positively to me, even though I'm quite obviously not the person who caused her problems. No matter what I did, her mind was made up that I was the enemy, and whatever I said or did was verging on evil. This is a gross example of what I'm saying. For her, a terrible experience with a single man made all men difficult in her eyes. But for us, this coloring of experience by previous experience goes on all the time. We're creatures of conditioning, the many and various impetuses on our minds determining how we react to the stimuli we encounter. If we didn't have these latencies, no matter what objects we encountered, we would not experience afflictive emotions. But while we have these latencies, sense objects will always be a cause for afflictive emotions to arise. Any sense object, whether of sight, hearing, taste, smell, or touch, can stimulate afflictive emotion. Now, I must admit, I'm partial to a strong aromatic cup of coffee. I'm not partial to shopping malls, but occasionally I have to go to one, say Westfield or St. Luke's. Normally in these places, as you probably know, coffee shops cleverly open out into corridors and walkways, and then the rich smell of coffee wafts out to the people wasting time around the shops. Just that smell is enough to make the thought of enjoying a delicious cappuccino arise in my mind. And there you have attachment making its ugly self known. Of course, if I give in to the urge and treat myself to a cappuccino, it might bring momentary happiness, but it also strengthens the desire and attachment in my mind. And so in the future, even the sight of a picture of a coffee bean will raise desire. On and on it will go, and I will never be free of the chains of attachment. Actually, we don't even need the sense objects to come into contact with our senses. Just the memory can make the affliction arise. How many times have you sat in meditation quietly contemplating your breath or some other object, and suddenly the memory pops up which causes your mind to go spiraling off into desire or anger? Perhaps the memory of your partner arises, and the next moment you realize that you've gone into a dreamland of the nice time you're going to have on the weekend with him or her. Or you remember an argument you had last week with a work colleague, and for the next 5 minutes you're going over the whole episode and working out how you're going to deal with them the next time you see them. Especially as beginners, we have to be really mindful and alert to what is happening in our minds and be ready to counteract the negativities as they arise. For it's really easy to get carried away by afflictive emotions and create negative karma that will haunt us in the future. Actually, it's best if we can stay away from sense objects that cause afflictive emotions, but that's not really possible if you're an ordinary person with a job and all the trappings. It's okay for monks who like to meditate out in the forest, but those are few and far, far between. So instead, we have to practice mindfulness and be careful. When we become much more experienced and get high realizations, it will be okay to experience sense objects as they are, because we won't develop attachment or aversion for them. Although we will be able to enjoy beautiful objects, they won't cause attachment in our minds, and although we will come across rough, violent people, they won't cause us to develop hatred. Until that time, we still have a lot of hard, uncomfortable work to do. So that is two factors that make the delusions arise: latencies and sense objects. A third factor is bad company. And no, I don't mean only drug dealers and violent gang members. Bad company is anybody that encourages us to do things which will develop negative karma. Bad company can be really friendly, interesting people who encourage you to do things which are actually just a complete waste of time, like always going to the movies, bars and parties, talking a lot of gossip and so on. Bad company refers to people who make our delusions arise, and as everyone we come across is deluded themselves, anyone can do so. We are often greatly influenced by the people we most closely associate with, so it's important for us to choose associates who encourage our Dharma intentions and practice. Otherwise, we can be easily led into ways that actually steer us away from the Dharma and into activities that just increase the afflictive emotions. Factor number four is distracting narration. What do you think will be the karmic result of someone who is a movie critic? Someone who is always going to the movies and whose life is centered around making up stories about drugs, murder, sex, fantasy, and so on. When we focus on such stories, we can really get caught up and even act as though the stories are real. I've mentioned on the program before people who I used to work with who watched soap operas and then came into work and discussed them as though the characters were in fact really living. It's as though the characters were these colleagues' neighbors. They could devote a whole lunch hour to just gossiping about them. Some my co-workers hated. Some they were really fond of. Some they found really sexy, others they found repulsive. You could just see the delusion swirling about. This is what is meant by distracting narration. It refers to stories, shows, movies, and so on that cause the afflictive emotions to arise within us. Such stories can have strong effects, particularly when we are young and impressionable. We can all, no doubt, remember movies or books from our youth that had powerful lifelong effects on us. And quite frequently, we hear of youths who have been influenced to act in really antisocial ways by movies with violent themes. Then, familiarity also plays a big part in allowing the afflictive emotions to take hold. We are so familiar with some of our delusions that they arise quite spontaneously and naturally. Someone might always appear angry and aggressive, and we might think that this is just the way they are. But actually, that's just a learned conditioned behavior the person has become so familiar with that it just comes up in any situation. I saw a snip of Mike Tyson talking to Oprah Winfrey a little while ago. It might have been on some news website. And the talk was all about aggression. Tyson's lack of regret for biting Evander Holyfield's ears in their boxing match. Tyson's turbulent relationship with Robin Givens, in which he talked about socking her and her socking him. Aggression is obviously so much a part of Tyson's life that it arises very easily whenever he gets into a situation he finds difficult. Of course, in one sense, he was able to use that aggression to gain world prominence. But on the face of it, it's the price he has to pay and will pay in the future for making himself so familiar with it. Is that worth it? I can't, of course, say whether he's a highly realized being or not, but in ordinary terms, becoming so familiar with reacting aggressively cannot and will not have positive karmic effects. As familiarity with the delusions brings us into trouble, familiarity with the opposite will help us. So the more we can make ourselves familiar with Dharma practice and activities, the better our future experiences will be. This also means applying the antidote to our strongest delusions, those we are most familiar with. For instance, with strong familiarity with attachment to our own or another's body, we can in our mind dissect the body and become more familiar with all its disgusting aspects, seeing how it is a producer of all sorts of things we normally don't want to be even near, never mind coming into contact with. The antidote to aggression is the development of love and compassion, seeing how all beings don't want suffering but do want happiness, just like ourselves, and so on. The final factor in the arousal of the afflictive emotion is inappropriate attention. Shopping malls are great environments for inappropriate attention. All sorts of goodies are on display for us to go and ogle and lust after. Shopping malls are there just to cater for people who think retail therapy is a form of happiness. People go weekend after weekend to find things to buy or to let their minds dwell on for the next week. A person might see a beautiful piece of clothing and wonder if they even have enough money to buy it. Even though they may not buy it immediately, they spend the next week thinking about it and planning ways to get it. Then eventually they might buy it, but given a couple of weeks, that obsession is given way to a new one. Now it might be a new accessory or some such. When we allow our minds to dwell on what is desirable about objects of attachment or what is undesirable about the things we don't like, we are allowing the mind to hone in on inappropriate attention, and it only results in suffering. As we've said before, it's important to be mindful and alert so that we don't continue to develop faulty states of mind. The idea is to clear our minds of all the dross, not to encourage it. Now we've come to the end of the program for today. Thank you for joining me, and as usual, I hope you'll be with us again next week. Please dedicate any positive energy we have developed through this program to attaining enlightenment, not only for our own benefit, but for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Thank you, and goodbye.